Welcome to the WellPower Podcast, the ultimate biohacking roadmap, showcasing the brightest minds, research, and optimization tools across fitness, nutrition, health, and high performance, with insight and approachable methods to power your wellness. I'm your host, Kristen. Let's take it there. This is WellPower. Welcome to the WellPower Podcast, first official episode. I am incredibly excited to bring you such a powerhouse guest to kick off this program. Gabby Reese exemplifies strength and grace and resiliency in a way that is pretty darn extraordinary. She is not just a volleyball legend that we all know, but an inspirational leader, a New York Times bestselling author, a wife, and a mom. She was Nike's first female spokeswoman, has created her own fitness format called HiX, co-founded XPT Extreme Performance Training with big wave surfer and husband Laird Hamilton, an executive member of Laird Superfood. I know when you listen to the conversation today, you will see the high level of dedication Gabby brings to building and leading health and fitness methods so many people can get well. Now, we cover a lot of ground in the show today, but there's one through line that I noticed, and that is how Gabby works to drive her inner compass and how she encourages us to drive our own inner compass around fitness and wellness and self-care and work and family and life in a way that honors and brings to the table the person we know we truly are. And that might sound a little bit lofty, but a year and a half ago, I had the experience to go to an XPT weekend at Gabby and Laird's home and see Gabby in action. And I can wholeheartedly say that watching her and getting to know her, I truly know this is the place she operates from. She wants us to bring our truest selves to the table, and she's always going to bring her truest self to the table for all of us. And this XPT experience weekend led me quite quickly into becoming a certified XPT coach. And I cannot recommend more highly the XPT Life app, which has breathing and workout programming and a progression that really will help you organize your fitness game. And also this XPT experience weekend. If you get a chance to go and do it, run, don't walk. It is life-changing. To me, a person who had fitness and wellness experience already and other certifications, it brought me just an opening to so many new methods that I could apply to not only get myself healthy, but work with clients and get them more well, which is the ultimate goal, right? We all want to live longer, better. And that XPT weekend was wild. It was filled with like exposure training, so I would be falling in love with the ice bath and then being in the sauna, and we got to experience a ton of breath work. I faced some really big fears and blind spots for me in the way I manage my breath and the way I managed weights in the pool. And Gabby was right there coaching me, letting me know how to modify what I needed to do and making sure that I did not get out of the water without feeling successful. And that's a talent. And I will never forget the last day we did a big beach training, and I was covered with sand and I was crawling up this hill with a bunch of weights and seawater and just a mess, feeling like I had the last spark in the tank. And as I had my face in the sand at the top of the hill, here comes Laird laughing, handing me a coconut, telling me to drink up and have some coconut water, and got to experience over the course of that weekend and that time just the care and the intention that gets put into every single weekend and every single program that Gabby and Laird put together. So I tried all the Laird superfoods. I learned about the sourcing. I had an amazing time getting to know and beginning a relationship with Gabby, and I could not be more honored to bring you some insight, some conversation, and some real deal info from Gabby Reese. So let's get some. Okay, well, we're lucky enough to have Gabby Reese with us today. So welcome to the show. Welcome to WellPower, Gabby.
Thank you for having me. I think we were originally supposed to do this in person, right?
We were. You were going to put me through the ringer of a fitness session first, I think.
Yeah, we can do pool training another time.
Yeah.
It might be easier to do the interview not right after pool training. I don't know. So maybe it's better.
Maybe it's for the best, for sure. I wanted to focus today a bit on the topics at hand, a little bit topically, because you have this massive history of just high-level sport and fitness and modeling and writing and motherhood. And there's so many pieces of the puzzle to you as to many women. Normally I start with like an origin story, and people, many people know a lot about your history, of course, but also instead of talking about the arc of your origin story, maybe just the arc of your why in the last several years would be a great way to open.
I think compared to like the beginning of my why, because I think the beginning why was really straightforward and almost like primal. It was sort of really based around survival. And for whatever reason, I've always had a connection with like things that felt good or right for me to do and like to be involved with or participate, even at a young age, like, so like 17 and 18. And I don't want to use the word compass in the way of like doing the right thing compass, but at least a compass that's oriented me back at least towards myself, if that makes sense. And so between those two things, survival with that sort of inner compass, that was my why. And then I think probably mid late 20s. So I'd already been working since I was 18. So a minute. And so in fashion and then in volleyball. And then I turned professional at 22 and was pretty busy during those years. I think for me, what happened is, and maybe I didn't know it, but I was also trying to take care of the opportunity. And then you do that for a while. You know, I was always interested in everyone. And I think it is more female than male of a trait to like, for everyone to realize that I just wanted to be somebody who was recognized as hardworking and like, in quotes, a good person, right? And every time I had more good things happen to me, the more I wanted people to realize that I was a good person and that I valued that and I appreciated that. And that's exhausting. But I think, so my why goes from survival to going, oh, wow, they've handed you the ball. Maybe you can keep it longer if you take care of it. And then now I think I've gotten older, is you start to go, because, you know, you have mind games, especially when you're not bred to be successful. Like, oh, why do I get to? And it's not fair, in even in the other way. It's not fair in my favor, and feeling uncomfortable with that. And then realizing that, you know, I use the word grace and just say that, like, having the ability to recognize that I was fortunate and that if anything good is happening, yes, I have worked hard, but I've received grace. And that if I genuinely wanted to represent that I appreciated it, not convince anyone of it, not sell it, but just sort of try to vibrate it, that I would just take care that I was a steward of a portal of something, like we all are, and that I would be a diligent steward and try to switch from fear and survival and then from guilt of success to like, hey, you know what? I don't understand any of this. And so I'm just going to value it. And the best way I can show that I value it, just to try to do my best. And so that, I think, is probably where I'm at now. And I've been in versions of that probably for like the last 10 years or more.
Yeah. And I think it really resonates. Like, I see I've gotten the opportunity to actually be at your place, be in your pool, work with the programs that you're currently stewarding. And I think that that undercurrent really, it's really well showcased, if I can say, seeing you in action, because we didn't have a relationship before that. It was a catalyst for me to be able to understand how to go and coach women, because mostly I'm coaching women, but coach better or more directly with a balance of sort of that performance mindset. And then this, like, trying to hold the space for people. And so you're doing an amazing job of that.
Well, the good news is like, I think I'm always, for example, even if I do other work, there's certain things. Okay, I teach a class that it is the only thing I've done, and it's weird. And maybe because I did it as service, so I used to teach it for a dollar. And I just haven't done it lately for obvious reasons.
This was High X, right? This was the High X class?
Really, yeah, that's it. Like. And I did it for like 8 or 9 years, like pretty straight up. So it was the only thing I ever did that I was like, I think I'm pretty good at that. And meaning that I also developed into that class and the class developed into me. It didn't exist in that format. Of course, it's not new, but I had to kind of manage and figure out the format, because if we were adding people and what was working, what was not working, and maybe because it was basically free, I wasn't judging myself. I just knew if I showed up and I tried my very best, that would be good. But the weird thing is there's no other thing in my life, no other thing. Occasionally, I think I'm a very good wife to Laird. I never hardly feel that about parenting. And every other job I do, whether it was when I play volleyball, whether if I interview another person, maybe when I show up for on-camera work or whatever, I know I can do a job and I know I can do a good job, but it's never like, oh, I've got this. And so what's interesting to your point is when you come to my house and I'm going to coach you, I'm comfortable that I can pay attention to you. Like I know I can really focus and pay attention and pick up on some things. And I know I can push somebody with love and with like a shoving hand, if you will. But besides that, like you never know. You know, it's like I learned that from Ryan Holiday. He's like, you can't be confident in the things you can't control. So I can't control like, well, is Kristen going to like me or is she going to get a lot out of today? Or, is it, you know, are they going to know? It's like, no, I can show up on time. I can make sure she's safe. I could probably push her a little bit beyond where she came. And after that, I never feel like I understand what I'm doing or like I've totally got it. And that's good because then you just pay attention.
Yeah. And I think that there's a skill set, maybe you would agree, just over time, you start to learn to read people. Especially because you're putting people in this intentional high stress environment quite often, whether it's the ice of the pool or can you talk about sort of the, you put so many people through some of the rigors of it all, that how does that build back to you being able to read them? Because there's a chance that you're taking that is like, this person's out of my control, but I think I have a gut check on it and I'm going to go for it. And then if it fails, I kind of know what to do. I imagine that's what you have to hold on to.
Everything, right, is reading people in those environments. So the pool is actually really easy. It's instantaneous. Your whole bio comes out in the pool. Everything about a person I can see. When it's different is when I, like if with HIEX, I'll put people on teams and my whole desire is that the team represents you. All the teams will be different, but one of your more dominant traits, whether it's your fitness level, your nervousness, whatever the trait is, that I pick up on that enough to be in the room, that it's a great experience. So that one's trickier. I have to watch your body language. I have to watch eyes, how they move up and down. I ask very specific questions quickly. I've gone to places like with Mark Roberts where we have 100 people and we've got 8 minutes to put 100 people on 12 teams or 14 teams and we got to roll. So that one's harder. The pool's easy because the water reveals everything about people. And it's also a very threatening environment, even for people who are comfortable in the water. For me, for Laird, you know, you don't have air underneath the water. And so also not about me. My job is to take care of whoever I'm running it through. And so I think what's interesting is a lot of times coaching is perceived as like, okay, I'm going to create an environment or a system. You're going to do what I tell you to do. And I'm going to be not in control, but I'll be in charge. Let's just say. And in the pool, it has to be like, you have to feel like I care enough about you that I won't let anything happen to you. And if you believe me, then I can get you to go further. And so it's really an interesting thing where it's not coming with force or power, but it's coming with like a directness and in a way me saying, hey, I'm here and I'm here with you. And you're scared, but right now, maybe I need you to believe me more than you believe yourself. So the water is a very different environment. So you do have to, and I think the easiest way to read people is to lose yourself.
Yeah.
Just lose yourself and pay attention to them. Pay attention to how they're moving and how they're sitting and their eyes moving and their breath. And you just pay attention and you're going to tell me everything I need to know to be a good guide.
Yeah. So let's just back out a little around the XPT experience. Because I don't know if you'd say I jammed it in, but I hit the XPT experience and then I said, that very weekend, I was like, Mark, when's the next training? When's the next training? I don't care if it's full. You've got to talk to Gabby and Laird and get me in. And that experience was because I think of the level of safety that I had around XPT. So let's blow out 10,000 feet just a little to talk to the listeners who don't know what XPT is, to just talk a bit about maybe like hormesis and the pool and just all the components of it, because it's a program that you guys have been building onto for years now. Yeah.
I think, you know, we've been doing the pool for about, I think it'll be 13 years this summer. And it was all just like, oh, try this, try that. You know, the joke was it was treading water with a vest on, a weighted vest. And I would stay within reach of the coping, even though you can always go down and jump up. Lo and behold, that's a discovery. To like squats, you know, jumps as much as you can. And when you're out of air, just come up. And then it really got like grown up and there was some structure to it. And then we got introduced to heat and ice and then, you know, breathing, which has been around forever, but Laird being the more curious. And also because I'm dealing with day-to-day details all the time. I am curious, but I sort of don't do the lookup as much. He really does. And I am grateful for that because when it's good enough, he'll be like, hey, check this out. So then we got involved with the breathing, you know, for either down regulating or up regulating, or using the breath really as a tool in performance in life and things like that. And then I have a dear friend that, you know, Jennifer, that basically created it. So I don't know, 6-7 years ago, she said, oh, you have to do this and people, we can do experiences. And I was like, oh yeah, no way. I don't want to have people, because let me tell you, there's not one person who comes to XPT that isn't smart or talented in their world, whatever that means, right? So it's not like, you know, I don't need these people to come for 2.5 days from all around the world, pay money, come from their places that they live, and like, will we really have something genuine to offer them? Because that's asking a lot of someone. And you over-deliver. And, you know, Laird begrudgingly always does everything that's in a time commitment because he'd rather just feel like, hey, I'm free and I can go to the ocean at any time. But he is also a person that when he shows up, he is always all in. He doesn't have sort of an in-between gear. That's just not him. So you've got the pool training that has all kinds of elements to it. You know, you have ballistic elements to it. So if you're an athlete, it's a way to train without pounding your joints. You know, you can work on the breath. You can work on all kinds of training. There's a lot of breath holding, but in motion. So there's sort of some interesting things that you're doing in the training where you're increasing your CO2 capacity and you're also managing real stress. Because some of these tasks, as you remember, only are completed if you relax. It doesn't mean deny what you're feeling, but it means, oh, I notice and I'm okay. And so that, for me, if we do any training that doesn't translate to everyday life, it's a complete waste of time. And so we have that. We have the thermogenic training, the heat and the ice, and I mean, thermoregulating. And then some people know it as exposure training. And then we have the breath work. And then, you know, if you come to experiences, we do mobility things. Because functional movement, most of us, including myself, really don't work correctly. You know, one pattern or another is off. Like my hinge is very good. My squat, because of my length of my bones and what have you, and I'm a jumper. I'm always working on the functional, real movement of how I'm doing things. So we always incorporate that. And then we're usually fortunate enough to sort of bring in a guest lecturer, guest trainer, because the other idea about XPT is we're going to tell you what we know right now that seems really pretty good and to the best of our ability. But we're also open to the idea that we might be completely wrong on something and in a year's time, we'll have something different. So the idea, and it's really based on Laird, and it's like any really good teacher. It's like you have to stay a student. And it doesn't mean a ping pong ball where you're flying all over the place and changing the pillars. The pillars are going to be the pillars. Sleep is good. Hydration is good. Strength and flexibility and balance is good. Like these things are never going to change. But maybe some of the ways that we arrive will improve. So I think that that's the underlying thing about XPT. And it's also not telling anyone. I'm not here to tell anyone what to do or how to do it. What I'm here is to say, hey, I've been kind of doing a lot of this for a long time. He has too. PJ's been doing it. Mark's been doing it. And this is kind of what keeps showing up. And here's some science on it because that's important. And inviting people also to kind of fill in where the gaps are for themselves. You know, that's the other thing. It's like, that's why I think Laird is so successful for so long is because he's one person who's like, I'm not good at that. I'm going to work on that. Me, I'm like, I'm really good at this. I want to keep doing that. And it's just kind of inviting people to go, hey, if you're really going to be like a badass, you can suck at stuff. So XPT has experiences. They also have certifications online. And then they will eventually probably have places that people can go and at least experience breathing, mobility, and heat night. The pool is tricky.
Yeah, the pool is, it's so fun. And it's like, as it goes in the pool, I think it holds true for the ice too. I think as it goes in the pool, as it goes in the ice, it goes in life. And really, yeah, I feel it. Like that's a piece of it. Can you elaborate a little bit more on the importance of breath? I think a lot of listeners are just starting to tap in, you know, with all the COVID stuff, people are talking a lot about breath work right now. I think that there is a slight feeling of, oh, how do I start? What's right? What's wrong? And so can you just elaborate a little bit on your thoughts on breath, your take on it, sort of whether it's the XPT push out for breath?
I'll just give you the third grade version. Like that's how I try to explain. This is how I like everything to be explained to me. And this is how I try to explain everything. Most of us are breathing into our upper body. So people can be sitting there right now listening to this. If you notice, if you inhale, if you, you know, lift your traps, or if it's just in your chest. Most of us do this because we're sitting quite a bit. And naturally, we really should breathe first deeply into our stomach. And there'll be people who go, well, okay, how do you do that? And I just say, fake it. When I breathe in, when I inhale, I actually push my stomach out. I would suggest, I interviewed Dr. Belisa Branich, and we talked a lot about breathing because this is what she does. And really laying down in the beginning is important because, you know, you support your spine with parts of your muscles, your abdominal muscles. And if you're sitting and all of this is happening, you're trying to relax your diaphragm, and, you know, your diaphragm is there to support your spine as well. It's like, hey, just lay on your back. And what I want to do is, like, my hope is that we take the woo-woo out of breath. And I think that woo-woo is actually quite good. But if you're not working that way, if you're not hearing that way, then it's never going to touch you. It's never going to impact you. So I just give very functional cues. So lay down. I say it's a 3-part breath. Now, if you're working on your breathing muscles, which we can talk about after, that's actually 2 parts. That's different. And that's the breathing muscle. So if you're doing a nice deep inhale, you would go 1 to the tummy. I always say 2 to the kind of base of your ribs. And if people are laying down, the ribs should open up to the ceiling. And then what I like to do is tell people to visualize like their favorite color and then make that a ball is the breath. Bring the ball up and then bring the ball almost like to the lat. And people don't realize that you can push open, right, your back and ribs. And what are you doing? You're making room for the lungs. And you're getting this round and 360-degree breath. So not this vertical breath, this up and down shrugging breath, but this nice, big, round, full breath. And you know what? It's hard. You got to concentrate. And so why we stay in the nose, if we're going living day to day in the office, in the car, at home, down regulating, whatever we're doing, so that the CO2 in our system rises. And people go, well, why is that? It's so much more comfortable to breathe through my mouth, 3 times the size of my nostrils, and I get a lot more air. And things like that. Well, if anyone's ever seen a free diver, they scrub their CO2. Why is that? Because they want to go down deeper than their body wants to allow them. So they get rid of their CO2, which is a signaling gas to tell you, hey, it's time to get air. So they scrub it with their mouth and then they go down. It has a purpose for that, but it's dangerous. So what people don't realize is by breathing in through the nose, and let's say you're just sitting here per minute, if you got really good at breathing, it would be 5 to 6 breaths a minute. It would be pretty much, that would be it. It would probably be closer to 5 if we really stayed sort of somewhere between 6 in and 6 out or thereabouts. And the reason that we breathe through our nose is so that the CO2 rises. When we have CO2 in our system and we're oxygenating our system, that oxygen can go from the bloodstream to the tissues and the cells. And that's where the good stuff happens, right? Recovery, the health of the cells, mitochondria function, all these great things. So people don't realize that when we're mouth breathing, sitting there, besides looking ridiculous, right? Think about it. You know, we won't even get into the jaw oxidization of the teeth and all these other things, especially children. You guys have to, if you have kids at home, they have soft tape. It's really annoying. Make sure your kids are sleeping with their mouths closed. The way everything develops, the myofascial development of the face and jaw, is really important that they sleep with their mouths closed. But so if we do this breath, now what we're doing is we are not only breathing, we are oxygenating our system, and we're simultaneously staying down regulated, relaxed. So this just makes us function better in life and work and our health. Now, the breath has many ways and many tools. Let's say you go, hey, I've got a big meeting and I have to get hyped up and, you know, ready to go. Then you can change the breathing pattern to upregulate, excite your system, get yourself, you know, dialed up and be like, all right, I'm going to go get that raise or, you know, whatever it is. If you're sprinting on a track, hard to nose breathe. So, okay, that's when we kind of in through the nose if we can. And then what? Dump our CO2. Because if you're sprinting, and let's say you're going to walk around and sprint again, your job, like in pool training, it actually isn't to get full deep breaths. It's to get rid of the CO2 you've built up so that you can pull in this clean air. So it's getting people to go like, oh, wait, my job isn't done when I cross the sprint line. My job is actually to help myself recover. And then when I get back, I'm ready to go again. Now, for my people out there who run a lot, if you have the patience, you can nose breathe. And now what you're doing, because you're oxygenating the tissue, you're pushing off lactic acid. Harder in the beginning because you're trying to develop that breathing pattern, moisture in the nasal passages, opening up the lungs. But it will happen. And so for people who run longer distances, I would encourage them. So what we don't want to do is lift our shoulders. And a lot of times people will lift up and the ribs will open up, but you're not allowing the diaphragm to slide up and down, which, by the way, then we can get into irritable bowel syndrome, by the, you know, the diaphragm has a lot of jobs, right? Elimination, acid reflux. So there's all these things connected to breathing correctly that just would make your life better. And I would say it's free and you can do it anywhere. So if someone was going to go to bed, those would be those longer exhales. So, you know, 7 in, 10 out, 12 out. So that really puts you in a more relaxed state. And, you know, you can use it for kids. Go just a minute, you know, nice and slow. If I said I did a piece on this, like if you're going to homeschool your kids, moms and kids or dads and kids, before we sit down and do homeschooling and you kill me and I kill you, let's just take a nice few long inhales and exhales through the nose. And so that's why the breath is so important. And then if you want to go one step further, there has been talk, I was talking to Dr. Andy Galpin, which is if you really do primal heavy breathing patterns, like you probably did with Laird, where there's even like a expelling through the mouth, you know, you're breaking carbon bonds. And so I don't know, like people will start exercising and breathing heavy and then they're like, I'm losing weight and all this stuff. And you're like, okay, but is it the exercise? Or it's all this interesting stuff that just supports most of us, our goals of, I'd like to be more focused. I'd like to stay more relaxed. I'd like to stay more healthy. And I'd like to manage my weight and my temper and all these other things.
Yeah, for sure. I think 2019, after the training, I say was my snottiest year ever because all I was practicing was all of that sort of nasal work and thinking, when is this going to stop? I'm just, my nose is running. But in a way that I think helped my sleep, helped my performance. I mean, that I know that that really, that's a very true and interesting thing. And you had wonderful guests. You had Patrick there. You had Dan there, who I went on to train with his nutrition program because he was like, I don't do keto. And I thought, come on, you're what? And so it's that curiosity you were talking about where you have to kind of dig in a little bit more to say, well, what do you mean? This guy's, I have a baseline of liking keto. So tell me more, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's important too, that it's also things for different times.
Yeah, but it's hearing you talk about the breath is amazing. All of the things that I think you talk about with XBT, creating an invitation for people to sort of, I think it's blowing the doors open for people in many ways. I'm sure that you've had times where you've had people show up to a weekend and they're like, that was fun. That was really scary. High five. I'm never coming back here again. I mean, I don't know. They learn big, but it might be, I don't know. You know, have you had instances like that?
Really about whenever we put ourselves in things that are uncomfortable and something at XP is uncomfortable, whether it's pool or ice, I would just, yes, they're really proud of themselves. And if you want to go and say to Laird, like, what's it all really about? At the end of the day, it's going outside of your comfort zone. It's being open-minded. It's about trying new things. And so, again, it has to always translate to real life, not like, have you seen my abdominal muscles, you know? Or I can hold my breath for 6 minutes. It's like, okay. You know, the deeper you get into physical practices, you start to realize it has, you're only taking care of the shell that houses the spirit and the person that has all their natural things, anxieties and fears and childhood traumas and like just dreams and love. And so you go, okay, let me make this as easy as I can by at least making the housing somewhat balanced and strong. If you really, you know, start diving deep into, you know, training and performance, because performance is, hey, life's squeezing your neck and you're not losing your shit.
Yeah. And from all these things that you're doing, transitioning people into a different mindset, there seems to be, it's not just shifting this physicality, right? It's like, how do we shift the mindset of people? I taught yoga for a number of years and said, I put women in handstands for the first time in 20 or 30 years. And they walk out the door like they just had the most amazing sex of their life. This shine, like they jumped out of a plane or something, this shine. And I hadn't quite seen that mirrored until I watched people get out of the ice.
Yeah, they're just glad to be alive.
Well, can you talk a bit about, let's talk about the ice and heat. It's sort of a big, fun part. I think people are either, I always say the anticipation of the ice is worse than the ice itself. I don't know if you agree with that, but let's talk about the ice and heat experience, this exposure training, exposure therapy, if you will, with XPT and some things you've seen from a mindset standpoint happen.
It's funny. Okay, so if you're not willing to concentrate when you get in the ice, nobody naturally, there's a few people where they get in the ice and they can handle. They're not saying it's not cold. They just have something about them, their physiology, whatever, they just can handle. Most of us, not so much. So you'll get people that get in and it's like, they're not paying attention. Like we're in a fire and I'm like, so get down low and you're going to go to the left. And they're like, I can't see. It's like, yeah, no, you can't. Get down low and we're going to go to the left. And sometimes people in the ICU see them and they're gone. They're just flipped out. And there's nothing you can say to them. I literally have said more than 100 times, look at me in my eyes. Like, I have to like go like, it's basically like a slap in the face. It's not, I wouldn't, but I'm like, no, look at me. Grown, big, giant football players, whatever. I'm like, look at me in my eyes. And then when I have them, I'm like, I want you to breathe in for 7 seconds and breathe out for 7 seconds. And I want you to focus on the numbers. Because if you just sit in the ice and go, it's cold, that is overwhelming. And by the way, when you were getting in, you knew it was going to be cold. And yes, it's a surprise on some level, but it's not like you thought it was going to be warm and it was cold. It's like, yo, you knew it was going to be, it's ice water. So let's now start with that. It's like when people go, I kind of laugh when people, it's like parenting sometimes, like people have a new baby and they're like, I haven't slept or whatever. And they're like, it's hard. It's like, are you crazy? What did you think? Like you're going to be the first person in history where it was going to be like, oh, no problem. You barely change your lifestyle for this new person in your life. It's like, no shit. Like it's hard. You know, like sometimes with people, I want to be like, yes. And that is what we're doing. Like it's hard. And it's not fighting that. It's the acceptance of it and making some kind of, it's not peace. It's how can I be in this right now? You don't have to be in there and be like, wow, this is amazing. No, but how can I be here? How can I do it? And so the ice makes people, and nobody feels like, everybody feels like $1 million, right? It takes all the piss and vinegar right out of you. Then you realize like, oh, your muscle tissue feels great, all this stuff. But ultimately it's what it does to your brain. It's like a reset, because I think honestly, maybe the theory has been like you really, your body does think it's going to die for a second. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, this guy or girl, this idiot's not getting out. We're going to dial up. And so it's almost like anything extra is gone. And so like complaining, right? You're not going to be like, you know, I got to paint that ceiling. It has a crack. No, you're just like, whatever. I'm trying to survive this. And I think it makes everything super clear. And that makes us feel good.
Yeah, stronger mentally or able to tackle more, all of those things.
Yeah, and like also like what am I complaining about or worried about? Like, because I think once you feel like this is threatening me, like on a visceral level, and it isn't damaging, so it's kind of great. It's like this weird way to get this threat that's actually okay for you. You're just like, oh, it's not a big deal, you know? So I think that's important. I will say to remind people though, don't bang iron and lift. And then go straight into the ice afterwards. Use that away from lifting weights, because all the growth and stuff you're trying to gain in the gym can be sort of, you're not getting as much impact if you go on the ice right after. Now, if you're playing a sport, let's say, and you're at a halftime and you want to put a foot or a leg or your body in ice, that would be okay.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's sort of taking away. People are trying to sort of bulk and have hypertrophy and all of that will be taken away from it. Yeah,
it's just in the process. So I just want to remind people, like, it lives in a separate party, kind of.
Yeah, for sure. I also see that I thought when I first initially started, because now since the XPT certification, I've been coaching people in ICE, and that when I first started, I thought that, hey, I have these tons of women that are already fit and they're working on their fitness and they're working on their abs and all that stuff. And I'm going to put these young, fit women in the ice. And I also have women that are also working on their fitness, but they might be into a VP level exec job and, you know, a lot more stress in their lives. But for some reason going in, I thought I'll put these younger, fitter women will just show up and be like, I got this. And it was the polar opposite. It was like women who had kids. And so that's when I thought, wow, this is a brain game. This is really a brain game.
Control my reaction to my feelings. And if you have a lady who's an executive and she's already had a family, you are doing that on a minute by minute basis. Because if you want to, like, people come in your office and say really dumb things or they don't deliver, you still have to articulate in a productive way. If your children sometimes do things you can't. So there's an exercise in that. And I think that is the most powerful thing. And that's what I've seen over and over, is the people with strong minds who can manage their responses, they always hammer down on the ice.
Yeah, it's a good piece of the puzzle. So anyone who's listening, who's thinking about it, I think it's just like it's a ready, set, go thing. You just have to kind of find a way to do it and then do it.
Never easy. I did the ice. I hadn't done the ice for a minute. And then I did it, I don't know, last week. And I was like, oh, it's cold. But, you know, it's like, I'm not going to go past that. I get in there, I'm like, yeah, I'm not good at this today, but I'm here. summer about like, how come this isn't getting easier? It's not going to get easy. So I cold. It's like exercise. Like, okay, we know it's hard. Yeah, okay, I don't feel like it. Yeah, got it. We've gone through that. Now, but we're doing it.
Yeah, and I come across, I think that there's, I don't know if it's a Los Angeles thing. I've lived in New York. I've worked in New York doing this, but there's a thing about diving into fitness and people I've worked with or in class being like, but I don't want to sweat too much or do too much. Or they're trying to sort of figure out where they live on the spectrum. And it's no slight to them. It's just how they're trying to figure out how to get the best workout and motivate themselves. And also potentially maybe they have a little bit of a hindrance of doing the thing because it's hard. So, you know, I talk a lot about women, and also because I have you as a guest on here, and I think you have a lot of experiences, really interesting dynamic in your household where it's like Laird and the ladies, and then the coaching experience has quite, there is a very, let's not say that it's male, but it's just got a masculine piece of it. And so sort of balancing those, that yin and that yang, it's like my job has always been, and I think you have a very strong piece of this, to how can I educate, especially women, to take that extra step? And it's, I don't know if you think it's about personal responsibility or taking that leap to say, like, I can. Does that make sense? Like an innate I can?
Well, okay, I'm going to be really honest with you. I only have this one time in all of the hundreds or thousands, I probably should have the class 1,200 times. One time I was in New York in the Upper East Side. Everyone's in control. Everybody's in control, right? And I had to explain how to do the class and do the demo. And this one girl goes, I think this is too complicated. I think I'm going to go. I go, I think that's a good idea. Because I'm also responsible for the experience for all the other people, right? And so I'm not interested in exerting my will. I have responsibility to make the experience for everyone participating go smoothly. And I know maybe some of us live in a world where it is always about us all the time. And I think what I learned teaching classes was this: if you came to try this, I'm going to take care of you and protect your experience, but you will participate in what this is. And if you don't want to, I'm okay with that. But that's kind of what the rules are. And I think we live in a world where everything's customized. I order it, it's on my phone. If I want my swoosh to be a certain color, I can ID it, I can do everything. And there's something to be said for like, oh, hi, welcome. You've walked into the door. You're going to try it. I'm not going to push you the same way that that girl who's been coming here for 2 years, because that's dumb and insensitive. But this is a baseline expectation of what happens in here. And I think you can vibrate that. And obviously, listen, I would be lying if I said being 6'3" and having had a lot of coaches who they're not here to protect my feelings, but also they never attached malice to it. It never was personal. And so if you can get that trust, continue to recognize where they are and be like, on that exercise, lighten it. And then maybe the next week you see them and you go, on this particular exercise, get more. So they know you go both ways for them, not just like drive them, but go, hey, you know what? It's hard, heavy, get lighter. Like it's not a thing. Oh my gosh, you know, this is really tough on the rotator. So, you know, like you want to pick up a lighter weight. No, tough exercise, get lighter weight. But it's always dropping off information, delivering it in that mail, I'm not explaining myself kind of way. I'm just giving you information, but I will protect you. I will send you home better, hopefully, than you came, because I care. And 98% of the people, there's always people who are like, you taught yoga. I never had this because high X, you move. That's their corner. This is their spot. Go next to this lady. Because we're all trying to control our environment. I get it. It's so human. But if you can say to people, for this hour or whatever it is, just follow me. Just follow me and focus, concentrate, pay attention. Because that's the other thing that's interesting. Tell me what to do, but then these people are also not paying attention. And you're just like, wow, interesting. So you want to not listen and then not pay attention. So I believe that it starts always like with your, in your situation, like as the coach. It sounds silly and like cliche. When people walk into my class, hey, good morning. You must be it too. Like if you have shit going on, that's your, like you're not bringing it into the class.
Right.
Good morning. And we're ready to work. You know, and I actually learned that from my college volleyball coach who was a woman, because I always preferred male coaches, always. And she's my very dear friend 30 years later. And she is a loving, badass, intelligent, funny woman who drops off information in her masculine side. And it's very impactful, but if there's just some people, like, you're not going to reach them, and that's okay.
Yeah. And I think it builds back to the studentship too, though, as a student should find a class and an instructor or a coach that they really, it's a relationship like anything else. Yeah. So it's like, okay, cool. We're going to build a relationship.
Yeah. And also I think it's recognizing people, like, you know, there's such a powerful thing in being like, for you and what you're doing, this is badass. And I don't care what she's doing or he's doing, because they're doing something else and they've been doing something else. But what you're doing right now and the fact that you're here is important. And so I think it's never about giving false praise, because I don't believe in that. But it is when you see it, you went, oh, they went outside their comfort zone. Oh, they're improving. It's like really driving that home, because then they realize, oh yeah, this is what that's about. And then there's going to be people you go, hey, you know what might be a really cool class for you? Da-da-da.
Yep.
And I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
And that's how the student walks in the door or decides to go where they feel comfortable. Because you can't win everyone. We know that. And I think the one thing I really want to ask about that you mentioned was that you were sort of more drawn to male coaches. And, you know, in the fitness world, there is a lot of, and I think that this also exists in one other sort of question I wanted to talk about, which is like the world of biohacking, right? So the tagline to this podcast is about giving you the ultimate biohacking roadmap. And I tried to weave that word in because it's a part of my roots. And also it feels unapproachable to women, and I want to make it more approachable. And also, you know, I like to say it's the biohacking brethren, because it's very male energy dominant. And I think something potentially that's about, I've always worked with a lot of men by necessity, because in my corporate days, it was all dudes. It was all men. It was me and 18 guys in the region, et cetera, et cetera. But as I go through sort of my fitness career, finding the right people to work with, there's that something about the masculine energy. So I'm wondering if you think you know where that comes from, in your background, or the way that you were sort of, was it more male coaches? Is that why that kind of experience happened for you? Or is there something about the energy in that?
So if you're talking about training, let's say, let's not take competitive sports. Let's just take training.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe in a sport, and I call it a sport, like dance, ballet, there's a feminine and a masculine, right? Both, because it has to appear very feminine, but the rigors is brutal. Right? Like, you're not going to cry and your foot's broken practically, right? So there's some places where there are women who have, like, gymnasts, let's say, they've sort of beaten the reaction out of themselves, right? Like, they land, it hurts, you'll never know. Where sports, it's like we're going to war a little bit. And then you move into fitness, and fitness, you know, these are just energies. Masculine and feminine isn't designated only to men, masculinity, femininity to women. It's sort of like having one of your personalities, and where does it fall? So when I go to train, I don't bring the mom in me. I'm like, oh my gosh, hi everybody. I've got baked you guys some bread and let's squat. You know, it's like, okay, I've got 45 minutes. I'm going to get this done. I need to freaking pay attention and make sure that my form is correct. And I have to generate energy. And I actually always joke that I act like a derelict 15-year-old boy, because it generates energy. Like, I'm a little bit like defiant, and I know it all, and like, you know, I'm ready to compete and all of these things. And so I think it's about what happens is men do that easier. They're encouraged from the time they're little. Hey, go play. That's how they interact with each other. They probably don't, a lot of them, of course, there's always exceptions, have as much of that natural feminine, like, are you okay? Like, they don't have that. They're like, let's go. This is a game. I beat you. You suck. Okay. And then you're friends. But we'd never do that to each other. Not really. So now you're in training, which is inherently masculine for these reasons. And women used to say things like in the 80s and 90s, I don't want to get too big. Okay. And then, or you had girls that were like, I don't care. Like, I'm here to kick some ass. And then they thought they had to only push towards the masculine, or the world only let them. So now we're at a place where I think there's enough of a lot of blending, a lot of people growing up with blending, the nuance. They had dads that girls that were like, dads like, yeah, go out and kick ass. And oh, you look, I like the way you look in your dress, or whatever the dialogue. So, but if you're going to run the show, it's not women thinking they have to act like men. but it's understanding what personality traits are appropriate for that environment. So it doesn't mean I have to act like a dude and I have to push other women down and that thing, but it's, I can't bring all my feelings and my opinions and I have to speak short and succinctly. I can't be like, okay, so anyway, you know, like when you open your feet, you know, and that big toe gets like this, it's like too much talking, right? So I think we'll just see men there more often because that language, they've had the opportunity to develop it more. I do think it will shift, but I wonder sometimes if a girl doesn't come from a sport or have these teaching, these real examples to go, oh, okay, I know how to kind of shift into that side of my personality. And also letting someone know, again, in that environment, like, I got you. It's like projecting without overcompensating confidence that, like, you know what's going on. You're here to protect. You're here to push. You're here to do all these things. And we associate a lot of that with men.
Yeah. And what do you say to women who come to your place for the first time who haven't come in a high level of conditioning, or they're afraid or they're nervous, or they're like, I really want to. I see this from the sidelines and I'm excited, but, you know, maybe they're not even verbalizing all that, but just in their energy, it's like they want to. But because for a lot of the people that are listeners or people that are out here looking for better fitness or better health and wellness, it's like taking a few small steps is a great start. But then, like, how do you sort of dedicate yourself to that next big step? And specifically, we're talking about women potentially more than men, but that next big step, how do you get them into that mindset?
That sounds strange, but with those women, I do find that I'm more loving. I'm not nicer. Like, I'm not more like, let's have tea and have a crumpet and we'll talk about it. But I turn up the protectiveness, the nurturing, but not in that way of like, I feel sorry for you. So how someone could do it is either be with a person that makes them feel that way, male or female, and saying like, hey, listen, I was thinking of trying this hike or this bike ride or this class and I'm super scared or uncomfortable. So either they have to gravitate towards an instructor that you go, man, they got something or some magic and I just kind of want to check it out, and it overrides their fear. That happens a lot. Mm-hmm. Or they have somebody and you go, listen, I need to feel like I got someone on my side right now. And I think it's always to remember, like, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? Right? And just to say, I can handle that. I won't be able to do it. That's okay. I interviewed Kristen Ulmer. She does a book called The Art of Fear. And what she said is people on their deathbed, what they found over and over again was the regret wasn't from a failed marriage or business or lost all my money. It was that I didn't try. So like there was this girl or guy that I really liked. I never even went up and said something to them. Not, oh, they turned me down. That was okay. I tried. I had this idea for a business. I never went for it. Not, I tried the business. It failed. So I think it's also reminding people that it is so natural to experience discomfort and fear. It's okay. The other thing she said that I will propose to your listeners, she said, if you take a kid to the water park, so let's say you've got a fitness person and you go, hey, we're going to go in the gym or we're going to go to this class. And the kid says, hey, listen, I'm afraid. So this person might go, I'm super uncomfortable. You can't say, oh, don't worry about it. It's okay. Whatever. Now, if you're the instructor, you're in charge, go, I totally get it. And I got you. So you tell the kid, hey, listen, yeah, they designed it to be scary. It is scary. What I'm asking you is, are you in the mood to be afraid today? And I think that's another really important thing for people to recognize where they are in their life. If they're going through like a really brutal something or something that's kicking their ass in another way, it may not be, or it may actually be the time to take something on that scares them. But not to say I'm not scared, to say, am I in the mood to be uncomfortable and go for it? And I think once we can work that out with any one person and just tell one person, we can do it.
Yeah, it's about what's on the other side of that in some way. You don't know until you get there.
It's everything. And sometimes I hate to say it with training, if I could say to people out there, it's also not about how you feel. Like, I don't feel like it. I don't have time. Nobody feels like it. Like, I don't feel like it. I would like to say that. I don't get out of bed every day like, oh, I'm so excited. Like, nobody feels like it. So don't think you're supposed to, all of a sudden you go, oh, there it is. It's not like eating ice cream. Like, it's hard and it's uncomfortable and everybody has their level of that. And that is a part of life and growth and like real growth, right? Like positive tension to create growth not drama, bullshit, negative stuff that then kicks our butt. No, positive tension to make us more.
Yeah, we're doing all of this health, fitness, wellness, and taking on new things for like what's going on right now with COVID, or for the bigger picture, and that, you know, it's welcoming, or it feels okay for us all to hear people who have done professional athletics in their life to say, I don't get up every day like, yeah, this is awesome, I'm going to do it, because in the long run, it's going to make my wellness experience or my performance at a higher level.
You know, I tell my 16-year-old daughter, she's playing tennis and stuff, but I would say this to any person, like, you're so worth it that you're doing this for yourself. And when you love yourself, part of that is putting yourself in situations that are going to be challenging for you, but they're not necessarily going to hurt you. And it's really important for people, especially when they go, I don't have time, I don't have this, you're worth it, and love yourself enough to do it. And by the way, most people who train a lot are tired and sore and beat up a lot. So, you know, you also grow accustomed to that. I fasted yesterday and I wanted to, you know, to kill somebody in my house. Like, I was like, is it 6 o'clock to really go to bed? So it's not like I'm like, I'm fasting, I'm just going to breathe deeply and I'll have chaga and like go to bed. It's like, no, it sucks. I hate it. But I knew it was the right thing.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm doing it.
Are you fasting solo? Or was that your idea?
Blair's brilliant idea. And then the kids, they're not fasting. So they're cooking like butter and like stuff. And I'm like, you are grounded. Are you eating in the
So funny.
It, you know, it's messy, like everything. Getting it done is like, and that's the other thing too, is like there's have to do, should do, and want to do. You know, we live in these buckets. And I think it's really important to remind people that take training and stuff out of like should and have, and find the way to make it one of the things that you're really doing for yourself.
But how are you guys eating at home right now? Are you doing a lot of cooking like the rest of the world?
Yeah, constantly. Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm glad there's recipes on the internet, because I'm like running out of ideas. And we, you know, we have a big household, but one of my daughters likes to cook, and it's about making it. This is how I cook, and I've always cooked for over 20 years. I'd say I'm a decent cook. Came to my house, you'd probably enjoy dinner. I cook anything that I can cook that's reasonable in preparation. Can't be too long. Like, I'm an everyday cook. Like, I'm not playing like, oh my God, it's Saturday, I'm going to cook. It's like, yo, it's like, what's for dinner? Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Okay. Cooking tastes great, is healthy, and it isn't going to kill me to clean it up. I mean, I have help. They'll help me, the family, but it's still like I clean as I cook person. So I'm generally also trying to make things easy for myself. So I, you know, we say plants and animals pretty much in our house, most with more focus on the plants. And then there'll be days where it's like, hey, we've had too much animal protein, so let's just have vegetables, or days in a row where we do that. It is not a big mystery. And I do not have any no's for my children. They can eat whatever they want, because I don't want to put a taboo around anything. And we eat as a family, so they will eat the food that we eat for dinner. And I have an older daughter out of the house. I have a 16 and a 12-year-old, and they go through their phases of eating stuff that's like weird colors and like you're cringing. And they're like, don't, my 12-year-old picked this one up. Don't food shame me. I go, oh yeah, nice verbiage that you learned from school. Save it. Nice try. But it's just keeping it simple. But I don't want to eat food just because it's good for me if it doesn't taste good. I'm not one of those people. I'm just not. And the animal protein we get is high quality. But I know there's a lot of people who eat vegan, and I totally honor that. In fact, I've been eating a lot of vegan cheese. Weirdly good. Not stuff you don't get at the grocery store. I'm not going to lie. There's a place called Uncreamery. You can order it. It's so good. It's insane. It's like fermented cashew stuff that actually is like cheese, I swear. And then there's another one called Rhine, R-E-I-N-E, that you can order. It's like smoked Gouda and truffle brie and things like that. So if people are looking for alternatives, I'm all about it. I personally feel better with my training load. And I know a lot of people are opposed to this, and I'm comfortable with that, with eating a bit of animal protein.
Yeah, I do as well. But it's interesting because the dairy, I feel like the dairy affects me. And I think I always talk about women needing to do labs, and just everyone in general, where physiology is so different, get some labs. No one told me that when I was 20.
What's that one doctor, what's her name, that said women are not men with their periods? She's amazing. I'll send it to you. She does a great lecture on TED Talks where she even talks about like young girls when they're developing in a sport,
yeah,
as they're pretty, that they should actually be working on technique, because men at that exact, young men at that exact time are getting like bigger, stronger, faster, more muscular, and women's hips are getting bigger. And then her shoulder angle's changing because she's doing it so her arms won't hit her hips when she runs. And instead of her just going like, what is wrong with me? It's like, no, let's work on technique. And then when your body gets reorganized, okay, let's go from there. And are she performing differently around her cycle versus before, after, and all these things? So I think it is so important to get a baseline on your hormones. And I personally really like very good cheeses, but I agree with you. I think dairy, Blair has raw butter.
Yeah.
Raw though.
Yeah.
But that's about it. Usually we're avocado oil, olive oil, and coconut oil.
Yeah, for sure. We'll dig up that doctor and put in the show notes. I don't know, it could be Elisa Vitti, or there's a lot of women that I follow around just to try to get, you know, who taught me really this was Dan Garner about cycling and working out for your cycle as a woman. And I thought, why did it take 40 years for a man to finally tell me this? Why didn't my OBGYN or just somebody along the way tell me?
We're afraid of fats, right? And when we should be really eating healthy fat and not be afraid of fat. Fat doesn't make us fat, not the right kind. And I think that's a big important one for like not just feeling destroyed. Yeah. I think women get sold a lot, like less is more and, you know, all these things and zero calories and fat free and all that nonsense, complete nonsense. I don't go for that. And so we've done, like you were talking about entrepreneurship, we did have another nutrition company that actually just the timing wasn't good. It didn't work. It probably wasn't original enough. It was authentic, but it wasn't original enough. We've done other things that, you know, got lift off, but they puttered around. And after a few years, 5 years, 7 years, you go, hey, do we call our losses? And then we have XBT, which is doing very well. And then Laird Superfood, which you mentioned, which was completely by accident. It was off of a habit of Laird for 20 years. Paul Check introduced Laird to ghee 17 years ago. And Laird was a coffee freak for the, you know, kind of 10 years before that. And then when he realized like, oh, if I combine them, my performance now, because he's always interested in performance.
Yeah.
So you know, fat and caffeine together, slower, no come down. You can work harder, longer, things like that. Then he started getting around with all these other oils. And we had a guy who's a co-founder of Laird Superfood, Paul Hodge, who's the CEO, would watch Laird make these. He is like a beverage alchemist. Like that's just who he is. It's like one of the nice, cutest things about him. And, Paul would watch him and guys would come to work out and they'd be like, hey, can I have one of your drinks and like coffee, but with like this, you know, coconut and all this other stuff. And Paul's like, how hard could it be after like 3 years? And so he tried to figure it out how to make it. And the oils are impossible to work with. And he, within 3 months, he had the powder and he had the original creamer pretty much quickly. So it's vegan, obviously, so non-dairy, gluten-free. You know, they put Aquamin in it, which is a bioavailable mineral, sustainable form of calcium. We have so many incredible products. And like I said, it's completely by accident. And now it's totally grown up. Like we have a factory in Sisters, Oregon. There's 120 people working there. All the people in the executive positions are real grown up. Mm-hmm. And that's what's great, right? Like you go and you do stuff and then we're like, we can get grown up. Because I think it's also about knowing what you're good at and not good at. And so that business is thriving. There's unsweetened, so people are freaked out by coconut sugar. There's turmeric, cacao. There's hot chocolate with mushroom blend in it. There's original with mushroom.
The mushroom blend is my favorite for sure. I put in my coffee or my smoothies, and I feel like it's so easy.
Yeah, it's just, it's really good. And what I like is for me, when I have to train, that's when I really notice it. I can go for 3 hours. I don't need food. And for me personally, I'd rather train on an empty. And there's plenty of athletes or people who train that need to have that food before. We have sort of like, you know, our business philosophy and it's actually like in a legal document about what is allowed and not allowed in something that's called their superfood, literally. And in fact, Danone, which is a large company, they've just invested in Laird Superfood. So like it's literally in a legal document about like no artificial flavors and sweeteners. But for how I would like to live and what I define as success, it's not just monetary. We are incredibly successful. And so it is the reminder that it's really important, though, to be around people that will support you during that time when you're making those choices, where you could be like, oh, gosh, we don't have vanilla creamer. And if they were like, you know, just on this product, we could add an artificial, you know, if you had, who knows, right? I'm not going to act like I'm on some moral high ground that I, too, couldn't be pressured into something.
Right, right.
So that's having people who it's like, this is what you said you wanted. It's like, right.
Yeah. And it's how you're choosing your partners.
Yeah. It's everything. You know, your mom told you like your friends and it's really no difference in business or marriage or relationship or friendship. It's like, we can be different, you know, but help me operate in my better self. Cause it's not that I don't have a part that doesn't want to sit and eat marshmallows and be nasty to people and just say things off the top of my head. I'm just choosing not to. She exists, we say, but she's in the backseat.
So it's like sort of compartmentalizing that side of you. I think it's like the Handel group that talks about the chicken and the brat on your shoulder all the time. And it's like, how do you brush off each one? Or because you've had this history though, Gabby, of like years of working on that, especially at a really high level. And I think someone who's just starting out is like, well, but it's Gabby Reese. I mean, she's got all these years of just pushing those things off and really focusing her energy in one to succeed in one thing. And that can't always be your reality, right?
You know, I acknowledge my rough edges, but more internally to myself. And then I have like those one or two friends, like with Laird, I'll say stuff like, hey, can I confess something today? Which means like I had a really nasty response internally to something that occurred, but I didn't act upon it, but I still need to get it out. Like I need to put it on a safe table to just go put it out and look at it and set it out and acknowledge it myself. And then I move on. And so I think it's important for people to realize it's not about like Pollyanna, oh, let's eat kale and train every day. And oh my goodness, take the high road and love people. It's about saying, who am I really trying to be? And who do I want to keep trying to be? Like I have so much to improve upon. So I sort of have this direction in front of me. And so how do I do and say things that are in harmony with that? And when I'm unsure or I know something is really in contrast to that, I shelve it for a minute. And then I find the way to manage it. It doesn't mean ignore it. It means I find a safe and correct place. It would be like having a bomb you need to explode. So you put it inside one of those containers that can take it. And so I think it's really about acknowledging our real feelings or, hey, I'm anxious or I am scared and I'm concerned about these things. And then having the right person who will either just listen or Laird says to me, because I am, Laird has a different deal. He'll say, you know, everything's going to be okay. And I think it's important sometimes for us to realize how much we're responding to what we think might happen or what did they mean by that? Or is that, oh, I think that hit a button of something that really is uncomfortable for me. Why am I having such a strong reaction? You know, just kind of being able to notice so we can have these things that also, because I hate drama, right? You ever do the thing and now you're entangled in a drama. And I'd rather avoid that. There's a lot to do in the day.
The one thing I noted about both of you and the way you ran XPT and just seemingly are living is nature is such a big part of everything. And then there's a piece of this where we're sort of taken out of nature. But can you talk about, let's say, normal circumstances or whatever the new normal is when we're back out, just how the interplay of you, Laird, the family, and nature, like what is its importance to you?
I did realize how much I kind of run around and I mean, I need to, but sometimes I'm like, what was I doing? Like, where was I going all the time? So there's something there about the stillness that we do pretty good, but just turning that stillness up a little bit. And what I say to people that I felt was that if we have our devices and we go to dinner, let's say you've seen it, you ever go to dinner and see people and they're on their phones, right? Especially young people. And it's like, oh, okay. So I felt like this was a time where nature, God, the universe, whatever was like, that's how you want to be. Like you live across the street from a place you can go take a walk in nature, but you never do. Or you go to dinner with your friends and you're on your phone. Because now we get locked up and everyone's like, I just want to go outside or I just want to see my friends. And so I think it's actually a beautiful tap on our shoulders to remind us, is that really how you want to live? Because if you do, this is the perfect time. Stay at home and sit on your telephone or your device all day long. Laird calls it face in the block. Just sit with your face in the block. And what you're seeing is people are responding the other way, like, wait a second. And obviously that's a rebellious response because we are rebellious. Like, what do you mean I can't? I want to now. You know, it's normal human response. But I think it's so important because it's like, no, wait a second. Our technology is moving so fast and so much faster than us than we're biologically really prepared to really handle. And that if we're not going to find happiness there. We can find information, it can be a tool, but it will end if we are not connected with ourselves and real people and the nature, whichever nature we have around us. I just think there is no way around it.
Yeah, I feel it as well with relationships. I think it's like I'm trying to get outside an hour or so a day, I have a little rooftop and so I can ice plunge and see outside. But I wonder if all of my, you know, I'm there's a reassessment of relationship and the time that you are distanced from people that I think I want to go back into the world and say, is this a hell yes relationship? Is it giving me and am I giving it? Or is it like, that can take a back seat? Like, no hard feelings, but who do I want in my life?
We'll pretend that we're still quarantining and we can't see each other ever again. For sure.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Yeah. So there's some beauty.
I know it is tough. And I know that there are people, you know, for me, this is how I look at it. The two things I'm worried about are, you know, obviously the people who are not well and the people who are worried about economics, period. But the other things are, this is a chance for us to re-enter better and reminded. Like, can we be disciplined? There's the word again, to stay reminded, even when this is in the rearview mirror, because it will go in the rearview mirror quickly.
Yeah, cool. The question I always close on with everyone in WellPower is, if you could take all of the things that you've learned about health and wellness and being your best self, and you could turn around and magically go have a minute with your 10-year-old self, what would you suggest, or what advice would you give them to say, this is how you can go into the next years of your life and all the chapters of your life with more joy and being more well?
I think it's the idea of not anticipating too far ahead in the future, because I have been a person who's looked very far ahead. And sometimes I've spent too much time analyzing all the possibilities and those outcomes, and they never arrive. And so I think I wasted a lot of energy there, and stress, no matter what, is still the worst thing we can do to ourselves. So I think when they hear me talking about breathing and exercise, it's like, Yeah. That's just so I can get to homeostasis, you know, like just to get to that place where I go, okay, I'm going to just enjoy it right now. And you know, the obvious things. And as a female, I also would have added, you know, it's okay not to make everybody like you or understand who you are, what you're doing. And also being aggressive or being direct doesn't make you a bad person. And I think that that's something really important for women to hear. I really admire that in men and women who are able to do that so easily, which is like, this is how it is. And I can see you're upset and I'm sorry about that. But by the way, when I go to bed tonight, I'm not going to go like, was I too harsh? And is that too mean? Now, does that mean I'm not a good person? It's like sometimes most times they don't really have anything to do with one another. And I spent a long time having to learn that.
It's like having to get out of a story or something that you told yourself.
Yeah, or just equating not standing up for myself or not really dropping off or being as direct as I needed to be with, oh, now I was protecting their feelings and so therefore I was a good person. Now, you can be conscientious and sensitive, but sometimes you just have to say stuff that people are not going to like. That is something that was really powerful for me to learn. And even like to not have to control how they feel. End the story. So when I come out a good guy. It's okay. You're frustrated with me or you don't like me or... That's okay.
As long as you're doing it with kindness, you're speaking your truth.
And everyone hears that, like, no, speak your truth. But it's like, yo, you know how hard it is to, from love, not from malice or reaction, and to do it early, the minute you recognize it. Because usually we have to get pushed or pissed, and then we do it in a way that we didn't really want to, versus actually just pretty direct and to the point when we notice it. And just making sure people know, like, it's okay. Like, that's okay.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you for spending this time with me. It's amazing to be able to get a glimpse into all the layers because there are so many. And I have just nothing but love for you and Laird and the program and everything that you're putting out into the world. Everyone needs to make sure they're tuning into your podcast. It's just the topics you're covering are really, they're deep dives. And there's a lot about, I think, emotional resiliency in the podcast. And then xptlife.com, right? You can get the app.
And there's on there's breathing, and they've given away a lot of free breathing curriculums right now too during this time. So I have to, you know, brag on PJ Nessler and Mark Roberts and like the whole team over there. It's one thing like if you can do a good job, but if you have a badass group of people that you get to work with, there is nothing better. So, and you know, I just want to remind like the people that you are talking to. I have a really good friend who is really funny and eccentric, but I learned something really important from him. And he says always like, does this make me feel comfortable? Or uncomfortable. And I think sometimes we have the right just to ask ourselves, does this exercise or this modality make me feel comfortable or uncomfortable? Is this for me? Does this relationship? Is this way I'm eating? All these things, not good or bad, And what's someone going to say? Well, no, that doesn't make you uncomfortable. No, it's okay. Like, I know what makes me feel uncomfortable or comfortable. And I think what, as long as we can move through towards things, and I don't mean without work and without discomfort. I mean, does this make me feel comfortable or uncomfortable? And just honor that, listen to that.
Great, so everyone will be certain to tune in. And like I said, I'm really appreciative of you spending this time with me. It's been lovely. Yes, thank you for joining us for another episode of Well Power Podcast. Please subscribe and follow us on social at Well Power Podcast or Warrior Woman Mode. And if you're really digging what we're throwing down, would you head on over and leave a 5-star review? It helps others find us, lets us know you're out there, and from time to time I'll be reading the wildest, most wonderful reviews on air. Any foul language you hear on this podcast is not approved by my mother. And as always, I'm your host, Kristen. Be well.